world's greatest podcast network.
You're listening to the Defenestrate Media Network.
Hey everybody, it's Jess Harnell, the voice of Wacko from Animaniacs, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, because you know what's good.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends in the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
From the shadows, the mysterious gamer goth, Miss Patricia Heltman.
Hi.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird, Jeff Bell.
What does God need with a starship? What does he need with it?
He's got to escape the black hole at the center of the galaxy that they flew into somehow.
Didn't you make the black hole, God?
Yeah, and I made it too perfect. I can't get out.
Oopsie daisy.
Oopsie daisy. I was thinking.
Oh, the black hole's so powerful it traps me. Oh, fuck, I'm standing here.
Son of a bitch. I did it.
I was thinking in some religions, isn't God like a celestial and lives on a ship and has brought aliens here, and that's the bones that we see? Something, something.
Was it? Who's,
pound sign?
Who's Scott's dad? Starjammer?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all. God is Starjammer.
Yes.
God is Starjammer. Yeah.
And he made his kid, and his kid's really fucking annoying. So everybody's always trying to kill him.
I like it.
Oh my God, Stan Lee, a genius.
Scott Summers is Jesus.
Scott Summers is Jesus.
He is Jesus.
Annoying Jesus with the
Jesus.
Piercing stare.
Piercing.
Literal piercing stare. Don't look him in the eyes. You'll blow them right out of the back of your head.
Pew pew.
How is everybody's week? What did everybody get up to?
Nothing.
I worked.
Literally nothing. Yeah, I worked. I finally made it to the comic book shop, and only slightly had sticker shock from the amount of comics I had available for my purchase.
That's what you get.
It is. It is my own fault, and I own it completely, but it was really nice to go in and see Jeff and pick up my comics and then proceed to not be able to read more than two of them. Out of the stack of how many did I pick up? I don't even know. Like
I would say, technically, lots.
Technically, a lot. Yeah. Yes. So
no, it
what
was.
About you
it
guys?
Was. I was ready to sneak off out of work yesterday.
Yeah.
I am currently in severe DTs because all of my meds are unavailable currently.
Oh.
So I was just feeling shitty yesterday, and I did a bunch of carpentry in the back room. And getting the game room ready and was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm done. I don't feel good. I'm going home. I'm going to take a nap. And then you walked in and I hung out for another 45 minutes or so. And then I went home and I laid down and I took a nap.
Nice.
And I got up and I cleaned a little. And we are moving one of my kids into the apartment.
Oh, nice. And,
okay. And so...
I mean, that'll be terrible.
It's more, I'm delighted. I am delighted to have her here. I am just so happy I can't stand it. However, what that means is that we are moving offices again.
Oh.
And we have not yet figured out where the fuck all of my stuff goes. So, basically, you guys really can't see it in the camera, but the office is fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest of the house is kind of a mess, too. So, you know, fun.
I had school start this week, so I was crazy busy as well.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Stupid nursing students.
Stupid nerd students.
Hey, we need those nursing students.
I work at the help desk at a nursing college. I can tell you right now, nurses are not tech savvy. They save our lives, but they do not know computers.
No.
The irony is that 90% of them have to carry tablets now, so they got to learn something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all the monitors and all the things that we use in healthcare these days is technology, and it is computers. Just because the buttons look different does not mean it's not the same.
I went to see a doctor, and he literally, both the nurse and the doctor, opened up the computer and diagnosed me and prescribed a treatment based on what the computer told them.
Nice. Google healthcare.
I'm like, what are you here for?
I don't think so, Dave.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want Hal to prescribe the treatment for me.
Take your pills, Dave.
I do want Hal to do that. I like that idea.
I don't. It's, you know, I like my doctor. I've had him for a few years. It's the first time in my life I've had a doctor where I'm like, this is my guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Previous to that was Dr. Johnson, who everybody called Dr. J, ironically, because he was about 5'5".
No, that is ironic.
And he was good, but he was literally so obsessed with my diabetes that every other problem was just like, don't worry about it. Let's worry on your diabetes. I'm like, I am worried, but I have these other issues, like my hands hurt all the time. Can we work on that? Mm-hmm. Well, how's your A1C? I'm not going to tell you until you tell me what we're doing about my hands.
And then I would have demanded to say, okay, are they related? No, then treat everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was nice of him, you know, to give a shit. Mm-hmm. But current doctor gives several shits. You know, we go through diabetes first because that's what doctors are obsessed about. And then we go to the other things. How your hands feel? Well, they hurt when I do this. And he's like, what's this? I'm like, I'm awake. And you can't tell me not to do that because somebody's got to pay for this doctor's appointment.
It's true.
If I could pay while I was asleep, it'd be awesome. If I got paid for sleeping, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I would say between the punching things my whole life, playing guitar my whole life, and sitting in office chairs my whole life, my hands have just not been treated well at all. And now I'm 50 and I'm like, come on, buddy, let's go play guitar. My hands are like, are you fucking nuts? We don't do that anymore.
Yep.
So, but I did, because like I said, I was moving the office. You can't see the guitars behind me now because they're out in the living room. But I did. I sat
down.
They
look good out there. That's the first thing I noticed. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I played for about a half an hour until I couldn't take it anymore and then, you know, moved on. But both my doctor and I think it's probably, at this point, just severe carpal tunnel. Mm-hmm. And we go in and do whatever they do in there with the bits and the pokies and all of that, and then we're done.
Scraping and the stabbing and the, yep.
But he thinks if we can figure it out, I should be able to start playing guitar, you know, for hours at a time again. So, just saving up.
Yep.
Just saving up. Because guess what my insurance doesn't cover?
Carpal tunnel surgery.
Anything. Oh.
Yeah. Apparently anything that's an elective
they
surgery.
They take your money and do nothing for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they could do that, that would be to them, that's their best business model. Take all the money and do nothing and give nothing back in return.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it.
Then we make a lot of profit.
Yeah, insurance.
Yep.
All right.
Nothing much for me this week. Tomorrow, big day, or yesterday, big day. I launched the Kickstarter.
Yay!
So if you didn't get the notice and you weren't a backer already, what the fuck? Get over there and back the Kickstarter. Come on, guys. We could do this. I need to raise a lot of money, and I lowered prices, so I need a lot of people coming in now. I need a lot. I need people buying. So Backshell in on number 4 on Kickstarter. The link is at the top of this episode. If you click through or look at your thing in, I don't know if the message will have actual active links or not, but I know it does in Apple Podcasts. I don't know if it would in any of the other platforms you're looking at a podcast on. Yesterday was my mother's 96th birthday.
Aw, happy birthday.
Wow.
So we were down there for a while.
I don't know. If it were me, I probably would have celebrated it in my 80s.
Yeah.
You know, 96, that's a big commitment.
Yeah, that's a long time.
I think so. Starting to get two birthdays a year at a certain age sounds like a wonderful idea.
I think you should. Yeah, she was like, this is the biggest birthday party I've had in a long time.
We did that for my grandmother's 95th, yeah. The same thing. Four people flew in.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
It was crazy. There was so many people showing up, and she couldn't believe what a big fuss we were making over her, that kind of thing. I was like, you're 96.
You want to get drunk, Mom? Deal with it. Just kidding. I can't drink anymore.
I could drink all I want. I just don't when I go down to her place for some reason.
We're going to revisit that.
Unless they offer me some.
That's fine. Cleaning up the office, I kept finding bottles I'd stashed everywhere.
Nice.
I don't have a drinking problem. I don't know why I hide them. I barely drink, you know?
Yeah, that's because you can't find it.
Yeah, well, probably. But I did find this ridiculously aggressive, a couple bottles of aggressive apple, I'm sorry, ginger beer.
Ginger beer.
And I like putting whiskeys in ginger beer because I think it's tasty. And so those two, I'm like, oh, hey, look at these. I haven't seen these in a little while. Right into the fridge, mm-hmm. You know, and then I'm digging around a little. I'm like, ooh, Irish. Ooh, rye. Ooh, vodka. What the fuck did I get this? Next, that sort of thing. You know, and they were in some dusty ass boxes. So they've been hidden for a long time. We call it selective aging.
Selective.
There you go.
Yeah.
There
I select go. This bottle to age. But I did find one of the things that I did find stashed in the back of the closet was my James T. Kirk whiskey.
Nice.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's a lot better than it has any right to be.
Yes.
Yep. Enough so that it's the bottle with the least in it.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Yeah.
Oh, it's quite delicious.
It really was.
Yeah, it really was quite delicious.
Quite delicious.
We never got around to ordering the Montgomery Scotch.
No, we didn't, and we should have. I bet it was awful, but still.
I would have enjoyed it.
Yeah. Good display.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bottle would be in my office right now if I'd gotten it. But
yep.
For us to get those things, because of where we live, we have to go to a person in Denver who then ships it out to us secretively.
Secretively.
But it must be shipped to him first.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we can't have it shipped here to Utah.
I kept trying to get shit shipped to Oregon, but they have the same kind of rules in Oregon, which sucks ass. Because I go there all the time, and so that was going to be my go-to. But no, they're the same. I had been trying to get the Skol vodka for years till they finally brought it here in Salt Lake in Utah. So those laws are dumb.
That's fair. I mean, we can rest on that.
Yeah, we can.
You know what I was thinking about last night? Very late. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
In the religion in our state that is very, very prominent.
The Mormons.
They don't spend money on Sundays. They don't like.
Right.
They're not supposed to. Right.
Yeah, that's like the general rule. Why is the liquor store closed? They don't drink anyways.
They won't be there.
I had always assumed that it was closed because the church wanted it to be closed, but no LDS person, whether they drink or not, because they're not allowed, they don't actually spend money on that day anyways. So what is the point? Why is it actually closed?
If it were open, and I am not making this up.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard this argued on the House floor about 20 years ago. If they were open on Sundays, then the employees would be involuntarily not allowed to go to church. And so since they want to involuntarily make them go to church, they force the day off. And that's how it is with most places in the state that are closed on the Sunday.
The real reason is that, you know, it'd be a quick stop after church.
Right. Well,
I can't believe Brother Douchebag was up there giving his fucking testimony again when we all know he's balls deep in the babysitter. Off for a whiskey.
I need a whiskey.
For whiskey.
I mean, you have to ban these things because, you know, it's the old joke. Why do you take two Mormons? Why do you always take two Mormons fishing with you?
Because if you only take one, he drinks all the beer.
Drinks a lot of beer. Nice. I like that.
Well, it's like Judaism doesn't recognize, you know, the Hindus.
Right.
The Hindus don't recognize the Muslims. The Muslims don't recognize the Christians. And Mormons don't recognize each other at the liquor store.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
That's an old one.
That's amazing.
All right. On that note, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Jeff Beck. Legendary rock guitarist and musician, dead at 78. Regarded among the greatest guitar players of all time. He was 78 years old. On behalf of his family, it is with deep and profound sadness that we share the news of Jeff Beck's passing. After suddenly contracting bacterial meningitis, he peacefully passed away. Yesterday, his family asked for privacy while they process this tremendous loss. Yeah, he rose to fame in the 60s when he replaced Eric Clapton in the Yardbirds. He left a year later to start his own group, the Jeff Beck Group, featuring Rod Stewart and Ron Wood. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992 as part of the Yardbirds and inducted again in 2009 as a solo artist. Eight-time Grammy winner, Beck earned his first Grammy in 1985 for Best Rock Instrumental Performance for Escape. He went on to win five more times in that category. Just last year, he was touring with Johnny Depp after they recorded a cover album together titled 18. So, yeah, this was quick. This was one. Did not know the fucker was 78 years old.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I would have put him in his early 60s, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he did play for the Yardbirds, and that was 100 years ago. So... But yeah, so yeah, I've been listening to a lot of Beck the last couple of days. Because you just don't wrap your head around what you've lost until it's gone. The worst for me, I think, lifetime-wise, was coming into a love and understanding of like Stevie Ray Vaughan 6 months after he died because they were making so much noise about it. I was like, well, what's this Stevie Ray fella all about? And you play it, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe he's dead.
Oh, no.
And I was the same way when they said Jeff Beck had died. I was just really sad about it.
I had that with Prime, or Prine.
Primus?
Prine. John Prine.
Oh, John Prine. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I had never heard of the guy until he died.
I mean, until Donald Trump murdered him.
Yeah, and when everybody was making such a big deal about it, I'm like, I gotta know who this John Prine fella is. And I was like, oh my God, we have lost a national treasure.
Yeah, yeah. I saw John Prine at the Paramount in Denver in the 90s. It was just like between, and you consider all the shows at the time for the music that I was into. My three favorite shows were John Prine, the Dubliners, you know, and the Cowboy Junkies.
Mm-hmm.
All three, not shit that I played.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
So, yeah. In reaction to Beck's death, Ron Stewart wrote on Twitter that Beck was one of the few guitarists that, when playing live, would actually listen to me sing and respond. Jeff, you were the greatest, my man. Another of Beck's former bandmates, Wood, honored his memory on Wednesday, writing on Twitter, because apparently that's what we fucking do now when we're sad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old, I knee-jerk to Facebook, what are you going to do? But yeah, he said, I want to thank him for all of our early days together in the Jeff Beck Group, conquering America. Musically, we were breaking all the rules, it was fantastic, groundbreaking rock and roll. Anyway, that one bummed me out.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys can't hear it, but I'm turning down the Jeff Beck bumper in the back so we can move on to our next dead celebrity. Hey there, pretty mama. Lisa Marie Presley dies at 54 after hospitalization. And if you want to know how weird this gets, tune in to the Left Show yesterday. Because QAnon has made some statements.
Oh, my.
Yep. But Lisa Marie Presley, the only child of Elvis Presley, died Thursday after being hospitalized earlier in the day. Her mother, Priscilla, said in the statement. She was only 54 years old. Priscilla says, it was with a heavy heart, I must share the devastating news that my beautiful daughter, Lisa Marie, has left us. She was the most passionate, strong, and loving woman I have ever known. Yeah. Paramedics were dispatched to her Calabasas home following a report of a woman in full cardiac arrest. Paramedics arrived 6 minutes later. A subsequent statement from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department said paramedics performed CPR and determined the patient had signs of life before taking her to a hospital in the nearby West Hills. The city of Calabasas, blah, 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 who gives a shit. Anyway, Presley, 54, attended the Golden Globes on Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
On hand to celebrate Austin Butler's award for playing her father in Elvis. She called his performance mind-blowing during her red carpet interview on Entertainment Tonight. By the way, as an aside, Austin Butler fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
You know, was it a good movie? Not so much. But it had so many good parts in it, and all of those were oddly Austin Butler and most certainly not Tom Hanks. I don't give a shit. You do not put that accent in Tom Hanks's face. Really, it was ridiculous. I don't care how fucking well he nailed it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's still Woody.
It's still
why
Woody.
Why is Woody talking to me with this funny accent? Oh, yes, there is a snake in my boot. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Because that was the colonel.
Don't care. You just let him talk. That's all there is to it. Robbie Knievel, daredevil son of Evil Knievel, dies at 60. Thought he was older. Anyway, Robbie Knievel died of pancreatic cancer after being in hospice for 3 days. It was expected, his brother told the news. He was in Reno with his three daughters by his side. Known as Captain Robbie Knievel. Robbie Knievel had his own daredevil career with 350 jumps, 20 world records, according to his biography on his website. Knievel was married once and divorced. From a young age, he wanted to be a daredevil, even though it was difficult personally and professionally to follow in his father's footsteps. I, as a child, was a huge Evel Knievel fan. Mm-hmm. I had two of the little Evel Knievel on his motorcycle, and you stick him in the rig, and you and then he goes, and you could jump him off shit, and the little gyros they had in the motorcycle kept it from tipping. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's fucking great, you know? And I did also follow Robbie's career when he was still doing jumps and shit. You know, a good showman, just like his dad.
Yep.
Another one of those lifetime losses.
Yeah.
Boy, my dogs are assholes again this week. I don't get it. 8 is Enough star Adam Rich, dead at 54.
Oh.
Dead of looking 80.
Yeah, I know.
He did not. Boy, them some city miles.
They are city miles.
Yep.
No, he had a problem. Those are city miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, died Saturday. Family members would not reveal the cause of death, but law enforcement told TMZ that someone came to his home and just found him.
Mm-hmm.
No suspected foul play. He played Nicholas Bradford, the youngest son on 8 is Enough, from 1977 to 1981. It was in Code Red in 1981, Dungeons & Dragons in 1983. He made VH1's list of the 100 greatest kid stars, coming in at number 73. Didn't like being an actor. Didn't like the spotlight. Retired in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. He had some serious substance abuse issues.
Yeah, that was one of the things.
Yep.
And I don't know that he ever shook it, so, yeah.
No.
Hence him looking 80 at 54.
Yep. Yeah, he was arrested after he smashed a pharmacy window trying to steal drugs and was bailed out by Dick Van Patten, his TV dad, from 8 is Enough.
Oh, wow.
Him, Dana, and Plato, and... Yeah.
There's some math involved in that, but I would say he was in his 20s.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a whole group of them, the 80s child stars that were drug addiction and all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
Too much cocaine.
Dana Plato did time for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She also did a little porn.
Nice. Yeah.
To pay for it, yeah.
Yep. And it was, as a child growing up, watching Different Strokes.
Mm-hmm.
Insert strokes met here.
It was a new and different stroke.
I'm just gonna sit here and shake my head.
It takes different strokes to move the world. Chris Ledesma, the Simpsons music editor, has died at 64 years of age. News of his death was announced Sunday night after The Simpsons aired. Post-credits tribute card was dedicated to the man behind the music. The Simpsons family was shown sitting down as Bart, Maggie, and Lisa played instruments, and a cartoon version of Ledesma was shown holding the conductor's baton. He'd been with the show since his first season in 1989, worked on over 700 episodes and 30 seasons until he left in 2022. He was a piano player from the age of 3. A formal trumpet player from about the age of 7. Earned a couple of Emmy nominations for his work. Yeah, last entry on his blog was in 2020. But, very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad. Cage the Elephant singer Matt Schultz was arrested for gun possession in New York City. Can't give a punker a gun. Everybody freaks the fuck out.
That's right.
Matt Schultz, singer of the Grammy-winning rock band Cage the Elephant, was arrested after police discovered 2 loaded firearms in his room at the Bowery Hotel. He was hit with 2 charges of criminal possession of a weapon because he did not have a license for the 2 firearms. Busybody snoopy little shit employee at the Bowery saw the singer carry a handgun into the public restroom on the ground floor. Police responded to the 911 call. Oh my God, someone's got a gun. And knocked on Schultz's door Thursday morning to recover the weapons, a Sig Sauer and a Smith & Wesson. Well, he was multicultural.
Yeah.
He's got a German. And got himself an American gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So they arrested him and he spent the night in jail.
Yeah, it really isn't much to go down for possession, without a firearms without a license kind of stuff.
It's... Always be nice to the concierge. He knows how to dial 911.
Exactly.
I'm bringing you in with me.
Yeah.
On this one, Pat.
These stories dusted off an old thing I used to do. So, which was edit a role-playing game magazine. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, what? This is still a thing?
Yeah, that was not the punchline I was going to do for the old thing you've done recently. Hey, when the door is shut and the camera's off.
That's right.
I do a little role play. Well, hey there, me. How are you doing? Paizo president Jim Butler reveals plans for a universal RPG license. Wizards of the Coast still putting together its bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sum this up, and you tell me whether or not I'm full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a role playing game that you've put together, or some.
Yes.
Attachment, some sidecar, whatever, and you make past a certain dollar amount, Wizards of the Coast is saying, according to its new Universal RPG license that it's pushed, that you owe them 25% of everything you've made.
Right.
Right.
If you use their system, and it can be any part of their system, and they can determine what part of their system is their fucking system. It would be obvious if it was like, well, I'm going to use this particular world or realm from the Dungeons and Dragons game. So yeah. I'm trying to think of a realm off the top of my head. I don't know, Pat, help me out. But
I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Realm. Anyway,
yeah. If you were to use the vampire realm, the big one, and you put a game based to that and you make money off of that, then yeah, that I could see that. I'm like, well, no, you are using their IP, but they are getting down to the granular, like, I'm using a D20 system. Oh, you owe us a royalty.
Right. So
yeah.
My understanding of how this came about, and this was just because I watched a lecture a couple of months ago about D&D and where it came from. It was a bunch of guys in their basement just doing shit and making games because there was nothing to do back then. And they continued to do that and ended up getting so big that, that people with money wanted to get involved and they wanted to start selling it. So I feel like this is kind of one of those... trying to grab for it after the fact, because I mean obviously they've got a good chunk of like licensing out there now that they can push things like this 25%. But they it was just a game that was passed around by a bunch of people and everybody started playing it and they're like, fuck, we need to make money on this. And the
Gary Gygax was the first to publish it. He was one of the guys in the basement. Gary Gygax. He published it.
Yeah.
Put it out for The world is Dungeons and Dragons in the late 70s, early 80s. Immediately, there were parent groups against it. You know, you can't
there
have
was,
anything fun.
There was a devil on the front.
Exactly.
Devil-looking like person.
I'm like, it's a Balrog, you dumb fuck.
Yeah. Anyway. Right.
They held on to the IP for quite a while, Gygax and gang, and then sold out to this company that had created a card game called Magic the Gathering that was loosely based on ideas behind Dungeons and Dragons. And they made so much money off of that card game. They were so successful with the card game, they bought the license for Dungeons and Dragons. This was a company called Wizards of the Coast. And they released third edition, which was okay. It was pretty good. Third edition was good. Fourth edition was a little better. Fifth edition was, of course, the best. And we won't talk about sixth edition. But they pushed it out. But recently they had financial problems. And the mega giant Hasbro came in. And they're the ones writing this new open gaming license contract. Yeah, because Hasbro, they want to keep their beaks in everything that they can. Yeah.
You just got to let me keep my beak wet.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying over here.
And I'm like, you know what? If I use one of these realms, if I use a character from a realm or a very specific race that has only existed in Dungeons & Dragons historically, then I can see owing you a royalty if I make over a certain dollar amount. But if I'm just using a D20 system, I don't think you should have a, you know.
Get out of my wallet, bitch.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cancel D&D Beyond subscriptions have forced Hasbro's hand. Swift Consumer Action prompts and Dungeons & Dragons publisher Wizards of the Coast to scrap licensing updates. But the players aren't done yet. Anyway, attempting to calm tensions in the D&D community and answer questions that were raised after Gizmodo broke the news about the contents of a draft of the document last week, Dungeons & Dragons publisher Wizards of the Coast finally broke its silence in a message titled, "An update on the open game license." Posted on the website for D&D Beyond, Wizards of the Coast's official digital tool set, the company addressed the many raised concerns after the leak of the Open Gaming License 1.1 earlier this week, and walked them back fast. Notable changes include elimination of royalty structures and the promise to clarify ownership of copyright and IP. But it might be too little, too late. Despite reassurances from Hasbro, Wizards of the Coast may have already suffered the consequences of their week of silence. Multiple sources from inside Wizards of the Coast tell Gizmodo that the situation inside the castle is dire. Get it? The Hasbro concern is less about public image and more about the IP hoard that their particular dragon petard sits upon.
Yeah.
The bottom line seems to be, after a fan-led campaign to cancel D&D Beyond subscriptions went viral, it sent a message to Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro higher-ups. According to multiple sources, the immediate financial consequences were the main thing that forced them to respond. You think the decision
usually,
to further delay...
That's usually what forces a response.
Yeah. The decision to further delay the rollout of the new open gaming license and then adjust the messaging around the rollout occurred because of a provable impact to their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Wizards of the Coast stated, In the unreleased frequently asked questions, that it wasn't making changes to the OGL just because of a few loud voices, and that's true. It took thousands of voices. It's clear that Wizards of the Coast didn't make the latest changes purely out of their own accord. The entire tabletop ecosystem is holding Wizards of the Coast to the promises they made in 2000, and now fans are setting the terms. So that's it for the news.
That, by the way, go back to that last sentence. The OGL was started in 2000. It's over 20 years old. And when I read this story, I was like, holy shit, this is still going on. Anyway, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're talking moving pictures.
To some, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much, but that's not true. They're testing out vowels and consonants and trying different sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on meaning, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We can share a love divine. Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah.
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
So what have you guys been watching on the TVs this week? Jess?
We watched not a lot. We didn't watch a whole ton, but we did watch National Treasure 2 the other day because everyone needs a little Nick Cage once in a while. It's just such a dumb movie. Mm-hmm. I love it, but it's dumb. And then I did actually watch a few episodes of Doom Patrol because I hadn't started that one. And oh my God, it's hilarious.
Inkley is my favorite.
So good. It was so fun. So yeah, so I think I'm 4 or 5 episodes in on that now. So I gotta keep watching that and see where it goes. What about you guys? What'd you watch this week, Pat?
So I finished Wednesday.
Yay!
Nice. Yay. I haven't finished it.
I got my Netflix account through T-Mobile, which was nice, and I finished it, and I'm glad I did. I just feel weird about the family relationship dynamic. Like, I'd rather they just not have it at all. Instead of having what they did have, but it did turn out in the end for the better. I get why they put it in there. Like, it all came together and that made me happy. So I finished that. It was good. I'm still watching Peacemaker. I don't know what episode I'm on.
It doesn't matter.
I now have Apple TV, but I have only watched a dinosaur documentary because nothing else looked interesting.
What about Ted Lasso?
I was going to say,
I will get on Ted Lasso. A lot of people told me I need to watch that, but that's one of those ones. Like, I'm so bad when it comes to watching new stuff because I'm like, I have to sit and pay attention. And if I don't, I immediately turn it off. Like, if I find myself looking at my phone for more than 20 minutes while the show is on, I just turn the show off and put something else on. So watching new stuff is hard for me.
That's true. Okay.
That's fair. That is fair.
So, I've been watching Pokemon Black and White. I know everybody's super thrilled about that.
Yay! Well,
why not? Why not?
Because it's free on Tubi. And despite my feelings about the game, because I know that the game was definitely something a lot of people liked. It's like rated one of the better ones. And I'm like, I felt like it sucked. I didn't beat it. It was the first one in the series that I didn't beat. I do love the anime. And I actually got a lot of a love for the Pokemon that they gave personalities to in the anime. So some of them are kind of my favorite. I know that's super interesting. How I feel about Pokemon. And that's it. That's all I have. I'm done.
All right. Jeff?
Did a rewatch of seasons 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery. At the shop, but man, I apparently it is the human condition to complain about good things happening. Yeah. But I could not give a shit about your bad attitude watching these two seasons. This fucking show is top shelf entertainment. It's wonderful. You know, and I hadn't seen season one in a while, and I was like, oh yeah, this is really good. And then season two popped on, and I'm like, I remember liking this. So I'm looking forward to season three. Season four.
Which show was that again?
Discovery.
Oh, Discovery. Oh, yeah, yeah. I came in and was watching one of my favorite ones, which was the Enterprise crew joining the Discovery crew. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Love having that on. And then I am almost done with season five of Community. Season six was the one that Yahoo did. And then they're starting to shoot the movie in June.
Oh.
Six seasons in a movie. Which, as you recall, was the running joke from The Cape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Which I believe lasted four episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's all.
Six
what are you?
Seasons in a movie.
What have you been watching?
So for me, dear HBO / Warner Brothers / Discovery, don't put a hiatus on Doom Patrol like you're some network television show. Just keep showing the fucking episodes. It puts me in a panic that you've canceled the show. You know, I'm like, we're six episodes into season four. I know there's six more, and they didn't put one up this week. And I was like,
oh God,
oh God, oh God, oh God. So don't do that to me, HBO. Come on. Just show the fucking. I don't care that you're showing it weekly. That's fine. Just show the fucking shows. Aside from that, there really wasn't much sci-fi this week.
Could I
superheroes?
I'm so sorry. Can I interrupt you real quick?
Uh-huh.
I'd like to add a postscript to your note to HBO Max.
Oh yes, please.
Don't cancel shit. Take it off the fucking network and then raise my fucking rate. Are you who the fuck are you? Wizards of the Coast?
Yeah. They've taken off all the good stuff and all of a sudden my rate's up a buck. Yeah. I'm like, what am I paying for now?
Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, you're paying for the unpermissed entrance to your backside.
That's right.
Unlubed and without apology.
I'm paying for your write-off of a show I wanted to see, and that was Batgirl.
Even if it was bad, I wanted to see it.
I wanted to see
right.
it.
Right.
That's what I'm paying that extra buck a month for now, yeah. We kind of went down a... We found that the show, Maya Bialik's show, Call Me Cat, mm-hmm. which is a cute little comedy. Let's just say that. But it's Leslie Jordan was one of the main stars. So after his death, we got on kind of a Leslie Jordan jag, and we found this. We found the first three seasons were on HBO, and of course, the latest season was on Hulu. So we watched all the stuff on HBO, and then we flipped over to watch them on Hulu. And then we got to the episode where they say goodbye to Leslie Jordan, which was heartbreaking. But I liked that they gave his character a happy ending.
Yes.
Even though it's all off camera, they gave his character a happy ending. And they actually, the thing they do at the end of it is, at the end of the show, it's not unusual, but it's kind of cool that as soon as the last line is said, they'll look up from whatever they were doing, smile and wave at the audience. And everybody comes out and smiles and they dance to some music and stuff. And I'm like, you make it feel like an ensemble production that way, you know, that we're all just having fun. And I like that. And this one, in that last one with, you know, the final, where they're saying goodbye to Leslie Jordan, they actually bring out his chair, put his famous jacket that he wore in the show on the chair, and then talk about why they did the episode the way they did. And in the back, you got Cheyenne, what's his name, just leaking tears.
I was gonna say, just bawling.
Yeah, he was just bawling.
I saw that clip of that of them ending that episode, and it was heartbreaking. Yeah. I've never even watched the show.
Yeah,
and
it was heartbreaking. Yeah, so they brought in Vicki Lawrence to play his mama.
Aww.
Which I didn't recognize her, and I felt bad. I should have recognized her because we hated her. And we're like, why she better not stay on the show. And then we see the closing credits. Vicki Lawrence's mom. I'm like, If you had told me that, or if she'd walked in with that wig and glasses at the beginning, I would have been all on board. Instead, she comes in overalls and a flannel shirt and her hair straight, still, you know, gray because Vicki Lawrence is old, but she comes in and does her thing. And I was like, she was still doing Mama, but I didn't recognize her as Mama from Mama's Family.
Mama went granola.
Yeah, she did. She went granola. She went redneck, for beyond redneck.
All right.
And it would have been fine if, you know, she could have been in a pantsuit or, you know, or slacks or whatever. But I still wanted to have that curly wig and the glasses.
Smart,
that
would have told sassy me, oh. Slacks.
I would have recognized her then and would have been all about, I would have laughed my ass off. I need to watch the episode again now, even though I don't want to watch that ending again. I want to watch the episode now and get back into it going, oh, now I know that's Vicki Lawrence and enjoy the Mama side of the Mama's Family. And then just because it's my umbilic, and then I've been curious because everybody talked about how well Will Wheaton did. I just started watching the Celebrity Jeopardy for this year. And let me tell you something. Episode one, you got Simu Liu.
Yep.
You got Ego Nwodum from Saturday Night Live.
Did not do great.
And you got Andy Richter.
Yep.
Andy Richter is a returning champion, effectively, for Celebrity Jeopardy. Now, I like Celebrity Jeopardy. I could go on Celebrity Jeopardy, although I know that as soon as I'm on there, my mind would go blank every time I should know the answer to a question. But I'm sitting there just casually watching it relaxed, and I'm like, this is the answer, this is the answer, this is the answer. And it's none of this, here is complex math for you to solve or something like that. Or here is ancient history that you know nothing about because it's for a very specific region of the world you don't give a shit about. This was all very open trivia, and I liked it. But yeah, that first episode, it came down to, you think it's going one way, and then you get to Final Jeopardy, and it is mind-blowing. It is so much fun.
It was a surprise. So, yeah, we've been watching that, too.
Yeah, the fact that they do a Triple Jeopardy round is really cool. You know, it makes the show longer. It's an hour long, but I'm like, this is good. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it was the fact that it was weekly is why I'm not watching it.
Right.
We sat down to watch some fucking Jeopardy, and then all of a sudden we're watching some other game show, and I'm like, what happened? And it was just because that episode one was the only one that was out. Mm-hmm. So we gotta go back and watch more of that. I do enjoy a good round of Jeopardy.
Now you
as well. Is that on? Is it streaming on Hulu?
Streaming on Hulu. Yep.
Nice.
And it popped right at the top of my Hulu because I've been watching Call Me Cat for the last week on Hulu. So it was that moment of, okay, I can watch this. So yeah, I've binged Call Me Cat, which is, like I said, if you like kind of cutesy stuff, it's okay. It's a relationship show. Sootsie Kurtz plays her mom and is hilarious. And of course, Leslie Jordan was hilarious. Those were the two that were saving the show for me. And I'm like, Leslie Jordan's gone. I don't know how much long Swissy Kurtz has got. Miami, you better just stick with doing Jeopardy. Yeah. That's what I watched. So let's do some TV news.
Well, I'm so sorry, you two, because I know you can't hear it, but I'm about to play a sounder from Fox News.
Oh, my God.
I'm okay with not hearing it.
I physically got angry within, like, 5 seconds.
Right? So did I. Like, I made it a third of the way through and then had to. I was like, nope, I can't anymore.
All right. Well, sit there and pretend like you can hear it because I'm playing the whole goddamn thing.
Fuck you.
But basically, something magic happened in the Batman universe.
Yes.
And Fox News is unhappy.
Yeah. He refuses to do it, and here we are. Joe, I want to get your thoughts on this. There is a bizarre new Batman storyline that has the Joker becoming pregnant and giving birth. This is a statement you literally could not say 10 years ago, but this is the world in which we live now. Look, we've had comic book fans on this very show saying no one is buying this drivel. So why, instead of reading the market and sort of stopping the woke garbage strategy, they're doubling down on woke?
no longer the Joker. Now he's the Woker, right? I mean, this is what we're dealing with at this point. Apparently, he got pregnant because somebody that he is in opposition to cast a spell on him. So it's not like the Joker became transgender. It's because who knows and who cares, right? I mean, it seems like everything now has to be impacted, including comic books, which is like the ultimate escapism for children and even adults alike. But instead, as we've seen with Disney, as we've seen with so many movies, we have to go down this route where we inject this sort of stuff into what otherwise, you know, usually used to be a safe zone. No longer the case, Ashley, Todd.
I'm sorry, but if you saw those images, I mean, it's just, it's disgusting to me to see this. I mean, I understand it's a comic, but at the same time, like you said, Joe, it's every single place we turn to now. It's like we cannot escape it.
It's not chasing
you. You talked about Randy Weingarten before with Dr. Sapphire, and as far as the teachers unions and everything that has got.
Fuck it. Yeah, I am stopping. Look, lady.
This is where I had to stop it, right here.
Nobody's making you buy comic books.
Nope.
Nobody is making you buy comic books. And look, you big foreheaded fuckwit. Batman is selling the fuck out of comics.
It's, yep.
It is my number one hold. You know, by a large ass margin. It's either fucking Batman or Spider-Man. Those are my two biggest holds, and then Berserker, weird. But yeah, and so people aren't even buying comics anymore.
Sure aren't.
Yeah, just because you don't see them on the newsstand, fuckwit, because they got pulled from newsstands because it became too expensive for newsstands to put these on their newsstand because they're not cheap to buy anymore.
Yeah.
They don't go through that distribution. They go through one distributor, now two or three because the big two decided to do their own distribution. But yeah, it's like there's three distributors and newsstands don't have them. So you can't say, well, just because I don't see them, nobody buys them.
What's a newsstand?
Oh, my God.
But my point to angry lady there that said that this is affecting children. How many kids, Jeff, have come into your store and bought the pregnant Joker issues?
To the best of my knowledge, none.
Exactly. Comic books aren't for children anymore. You know, they are, but they aren't. They're like any literature. They're literature now, just like anything
YA.
Else.
Adult,
yeah,
mystery.
Because we
genres.
Grew up with it, and it was all dollar amount. It started out, everything was printed on pulp paper, you know, newsprint basically, four color stuff back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and so it was put out in grocery stores. It was put where, and it was marketed toward children. There were plenty of children's books, plenty of publishers like Harvey Comics that published nothing but children's books, you know, like Casper the Friendly Ghost and Richie Rich. About the only one that's really still specifically aimed, well, not anymore, but for a long time was aimed specifically at children was Archie.
Yeah.
And about the middle of the 80s, they discovered that these specialty shops were opening up everywhere. Go figure. And so they started marketing comics that would sell specifically to the specialty shops. And the better they sold, the more they started adopting their other books to fit into that. And started raising the prices slowly. Now a kid's got to walk in with $5 if he wants to pick up Batman.
Yep.
Actually, $6 if he wants to pick up Batman. And he's not going to have that in his pocket easily. So unless he's some wealthy, you know. Wealthy trust fund baby that, you know, like he's...
I don't know, man. I am up in Mill Creek. The kids are doing okay.
Yeah, the kids are okay in Mill Creek, yeah.
I think it's funny he goes to correct the other two anchors and says, well, Joker's not trans, and then continues to talk about trans issues.
Yeah.
They're like so surprised that this is happening. This has been happening in comics for fucking 30 years at this point in time. Like, this is not new news. And calling it Woker, like, no. It was kind of my issue with when fucking Miley Cyrus, I think it was Miley Cyrus, she was like, why is it Supergirl and not Superwoman? I'm like, those are two different people. You need to shut the fuck up because you don't read comics. Like, don't get it mad because she's called Supergirl. there's a superwoman, like, fuck off, lady.
What do you want, a other superwoman?
Just getting involved for no reason. Right. She can be the second one.
Kick out of that in the episode one of Supergirl, the series.
Yeah.
Where, what's her name? You know, she's playing her boss, and she's the one who names her. She goes, why are you calling her Supergirl and not Superwoman? She goes, what's wrong with being a girl?
Right.
Lots of, you know, I'm a girl.
Allie McBeal.
The way she said it, it was just so
amazing.
Perfectly said. I was like, of course you're going to call her Supergirl.
I love that. I remember that. That was a really good episode.
Calista Flockhart.
Yeah, yes. Calista Flockhart.
Mrs. Harrison Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Are they still married?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Really? Aww. I didn't know they were married, and I didn't know they were still married. That makes me happy. I kind of always wondered.
Her final episode, because it was on, ABC? Mm-hmm. And then it moved to CW, and they couldn't afford a Calista Flockhart on CW, so she had to leave. And her final episode, which was the first episode on CW, she makes this joke about... First, she makes a joke about, you know, all the, you know, Kara and all of her friends are in the room. And she's like, you guys, will you just go? You look like a CW romance series.
Yeah.
And then at another point, she's on the phone and she's like, no, I don't tell him he's too old for me. I wish Harrison Ford would quit calling.
Oh, my God. Yes. Oh, I love it.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah. So anyway, though, this debate about Joker is like they did something really humiliating to the Joker that he has to deal with, and it's hilarious and funny, and you know readers are enjoying it, and people who don't know anything about comics and never have picked up a fucking comic book in their life are the ones getting pissed about it because they don't get it.
They don't get it. Speaking of Harrison Ford,
Mm-hmm.
I see him on the screen.
The Star Wars holiday special documentary will be premiering at South by Southwest.
I love it.
The 1978 Star Wars holiday special is one of the cringiest things to ever come from a galaxy far, far away. It was so bad, in fact, that it aired only once, despite the involvement of almost the entire main Star Wars cast. It's never seen an official home video release.
Never.
Don't look for it on Disney Plus.
Nope.
Anyway, we've learned that a documentary about how the special even came to be in the first place will be premiering at South by Southwest this year. There is a trailer you can watch by going to thecomicbookpodcast.com and clicking on this particular article. But yeah, if you don't recall, it was set on the Wookiee home planet.
Yep.
So bad.
So they didn't even call it Kashyyyk. They just called it the Wookiee home planet.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was a variety comedy hour.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. It wasn't funny. It really is.
So bad.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
Life day. We're celebrating life day.
Anyway, when this finally breaks, I will be watching it.
Boba Fett cartoon was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I won't be at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
Zack Snyder fans, unable to are calling for Warner Brothers Discovery to sell the Snyderverse to Netflix. Oh, yeah. Okay. Really? I thought the whole thing was pretty dumb in the first place, and now all you've gone is I'm suffering from a bleeding head wound and speaking nonsensically.
Yep.
But the vocal fan base that Snyder cultivated during his time working for the DCEU, or as a couple of my least favorite customers call it, the DCEU, they've given up. Anyway, the fans have not given up on the filmmaker superhero franchise, despite the fact that all the guys with all the money are like, yeah, no. In recent day, fans gathered on social media calling for Warner Brothers Discovery to just sell the rights to Netflix. Okay. Because Netflix is like, wait, no. Don't want it. Don't want it. Want that sexy Affleck running around in his bat togs. HR'd have a field day.
Well, you know, they could sell it to Netflix, but then Netflix has to pay royalties for all of the IP that they've just gotten, and they're not going to want to pay that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a bunch of money to be made. I'll be honest with you. If mm-hmm. they did it, I'd watch it. Of course I would.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Of course I would. But
I've already watched it, so I don't need to watch it again.
Well, if they made new ones.
Oh, new ones. Okay. Yeah I'd probably watch it.
All I want out of this
just
is
call
a solo
it Injustice
film
Gods
for
Among
Batfleck.
Us the series, and I'll enjoy it.
Yeah. I want Batfleck deserves his own fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he put on the tights, he did the workouts, he did all of that, did well in his ensembles, even in fucking Suicide Squad. The best part of that movie is the part that Ben Affleck's in,
mm-hmm.
you know, riding on top of the Lamborghini that Jocelyn now owns. So Kristen Ritter went to work out and wore a Daredevil t-shirt, and everybody's freaking the fuck out.
I like it.
Well, it's the Daredevil logo from the new Daredevil.
Yeah.
Daredevil Reborn or whatever it's going to be on Disney. So, yeah.
She's baiting right now. That's mm-hmm. all.
She's letting you know without letting you know aloud that she's going to be in the Daredevil series, have a cameo or something in the Daredevil series.
Yep.
Yeah.
She makes me want to dye my hair black again.
Okay.
I miss that. She's so pretty.
You did look good with black hair.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should try red.
Yeah, I could do red. It's just hard to get out. And my goal has been the last 2 years is to go fully blonde, but it keeps coming out yellow, hence the hard to get red out.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. I understand.
So I was thinking about it today, and I was like, maybe I should go black again. And I'm like, no, you've been working on this for 2 years. Leave it alone.
We have a friend years ago who wanted blonde hair. And so he came over to my house, and we dipped into my stepmom's basket of beauty shop liquids and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
decided this is pre-internet, so we were just kind of winging it.
Yep,
and
figuring it out.
We dyed his hair, and it came out shock yellow.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that stuff you use to bleach hair has an expiration date.
Oh no!
Do you remember when I did that to Jake?
Yep, I remember. That I remember his yellow hair.
Because we noticed it was turning yellow, and I'm like, I better get my mom. and I did, and she came in, and she's like, there's nothing you guys can do. You weren't supposed to use any of that. Why didn't you ask? Shut up, Mom. You know, that sort of thing.
Phineas this is Sergeant Jake?
No.
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
This is our buddy
okay.
Jason.
I was like, woo. I was picturing Sergeant Jake with yellow hair. Sorry.
I could make him do it. Phineas and Ferb is getting a revival from Dan Povenmire, ordered under the new overall deal with Disney-branded television. All I know is that my kids used to not be able to sleep unless the fucking TV was on. And if mm-hmm. I went in the morning to wake them up and Phineas and Ferb was on, I would often forget to wake them because I would sit down and watch it because it's so fucking funny. Mm-hmm. Doofenshmirtz, best dad. Such a wonderful guy with his relationship, not only with his daughter, but with his ex-wife. I mean, really. And then Phineas and Ferb are fucking hilarious. And Perry the Platypus. I love Perry the Platypus.
I love Phineas and Ferb. Yep. Love, 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 love Phineas and Ferb.
For those of you that didn't know, Snowpiercer was still on the air.
Oh.
And it has now been scrapped.
Yeah, it's no longer on the air.
Yep. Season 4 will not air on TNT as planned.
Mm.
It's the thing, though, is it's like there's like even Jennifer fucking Connelly's on this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I find it unwatchable. I tried. I like the movie. The movie's kind of cool. But I just mm-hmm. watched the show. I'm like, I don't give a shit about anything happening right now. So this one does not surprise me. The only thing that it surprised me is that it made it to a season 4.
True.
And then, because we like to end the news on all the happiest stuff, Rick and Morty co-creator Justin Roiland facing domestic violence charges.
Oh.
Yep. Roiland, 42. Was charged Orange County, California with one felony count of domestic battery with corporal injury. One felony count of false imprisonment by menace, violence, fraud, or deceit. Basically what I do to you guys every Sunday. He pleaded not guilty in 2020, appeared in court Thursday, January 13th, 2023, for a pretrial hearing. Trial date has not yet been set. But according to the felony complaint obtained by Variety, the incident occurred in 2020. An unnamed Jane Doe, who was dating him at the time. Anyway, he's free on a $50,000 bond, which was posted in 2020. And went through arraignment more and more and more. Basically, he did a bad thing. And he's going to get in trouble. And that is it for the news.
All right, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're talking comics.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We got a box.
What is it?
Oh, you'll see.
No. What's in the box?
Let's have some comic book news.
Green Arrow's upcoming book is only slated for a 6-issue run. But Sean Izaxi.
That answers that question we had from last week.
Yeah. Says readers have the ability to extend its staying power, you know, by buying it.
Mm-hmm.
Sean urged fans to come out in droves to support the book, which is currently only scheduled for 6 issues, but could, you know, go ongoing if it doesn't suck. I mean, that's what happened with Jennifer Blood, is that was a 6 issues, mm-hmm. and they're on their third fucking story arc now.
Yep.
So... Yep. Anyway, he encouraged fans to pre-order upcoming issues of Green Arrow. If you'd like to do that, I need you to wait a few weeks. It hasn't been solicited yet.
Right, yeah. I was going to say, here's Sean saying, you need to do this. And I'm like, how many comic shops went through what we went through?
Yep.
When I said, well, we might as well, I might as well pre-order it. And I'm like, I bet it's not up there yet. And Jeff's like, nope, not at all.
Nope.
Nope.
Yep.
It will be. And I'm there for it. I am all about the Green Arrow. I want it to be written well so badly after what they did to him in the New 52.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he deserves a comeback. But, Sean. Is Izaxi? Izaxi?
I'll go with that. Sure.
Okay. Hi. Perhaps you're new here in comic books. I can't pre-order fuck all until it's been solicited. And it's not in the current catalog. So wait till next month. Then, and this is a very important thing. I don't care that you did the thing. I care that your timing's shitty. You know?
Solicitation will show up probably this next week for it. You know, online. You'll see it. And then it'll pop up in available to order in about another week or two is what I'm used to seeing. So,
Yeah, it's usually, it's every time it hits the previews catalog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the previous catalog comes out, that's when we get the official solicitations for the books.
Right.
And then it's usually 2 weeks after that before any of the point of sale systems will let us actually order the goddamn things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's
all. It's online. It'll go online and then it'll show up in the previous catalog, which is, So you could probably pre-order at shops that aren't completely computer run, those few that still aren't completely computer run.
Yep.
Because they'll just write it down.
Yep.
You know?
Anyway, but, give it a shot though, folks. Give it a shot.
Yeah. Give it a shot.
You know, because what that is going to release in the middle of the fucking fiasco, the future fiasco that DC's got coming with its 20 new titles. 20 new titles.
That sounds like New 52. Let's hope we don't let's not get something that sounds good get buried.
And I think only half of them are Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Only half?
Philadelphia's first comic book shop has started a GoFundMe to try and avoid closing. Fat Jack's, the first and oldest comic book store. Initially reported by the Inquirer, Fat Jack's in Philadelphia first opened in 1976.
Oh, wow.
Has become known as the first comic book store within the city of Philadelphia. Eric Partridge, a Fat Jack store manager, recently created a GoFundMe to help the store stay afloat during the COVID-related shutdowns and a decrease in sales. The fundraiser has a goal of $20,000. At the time of the article's publication, approximately $12,400 has been raised.
Wow.
I will add that during the time of this recording, we have really missed our January fundraising goals by quite a bit as well. Just throwing that out there. Not selfish at all. Not feelings aren't hurt. I'm okay. DC's new transmasculine hero wields the opposite of Flash's speed force. Now, reading that headline, apparently the new hero is called Sloth.
Yay! I love that.
And basically, it wins fights by boring the shit out of who it's fighting.
I hope it likes to get tickled.
Aww.
Do sloths actually like to get tickled?
I think they do.
Okay, good.
Okay.
We'll say they do.
Yeah. Would this be a weird time to announce I'm changing my name to Sloth? I don't. Let's just go on.
Please continue.
But yeah, DC's Lazarus Planet introduces a new trans hero named Jules Jourdain, also known as Circuit Breaker, who holds a strong connection to the Still Force.
I was going to say Slow Force, but I like Still Force. That doesn't sound lame.
No, not at all. Anyway, A.L. Kaplan shared a first look at Circuit Breaker on Twitter. Meet Jules Jourdain. He, they, as Circuit Breaker. Can a new hero channel the inexorable Still Force energy to fend off evil? I guess you point and shoot and somebody gets tired. Needs a nap.
It's time stoppage.
Oh,
yeah.
So
that's exactly the foil that fucking Barry needs. Yeah, stop with exactly. The time travel, Zot.
Yeah, exactly. He just stop. He's free. He can free. He'll basically he can freeze you in the moment.
Can Barry and, go back in time?
Oh yeah. No.
Oh shit.
Yeah, he can go forward and back in time. Absolutely.
Okay, I was going to say...
This is why we have flashpoints. Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping that he didn't. I knew that he did. I was hoping that he didn't, because that would be a cool thing. Like, eventually they work together, and they go back and fix all the dumb shit Barry broke.
Well, that's being fixed now with Dark Crisis and Lazarus Planet. So,
oh, okay.
We're revitalizing heroes. We're giving them some... We're bringing back some powers that may or may not last for a while, or giving them special powers that may or may not last for a while. And then, we've reestablished the idea of a multiverse, of a bigger than a multiverse, an infinite universe. And so all that's happening. And yeah, everybody's coming back slowly, which will be fine. It's fine. It's all fine. Yeah.
It's fine. We're
anyway,
fine.
If you're starting to freak out about it, just remember Scott Snyder invented the Still Force in 2018.
Oh, okay.
And Scott Snyder, no slouch in the comic book writing game.
That's right.
So will they be giving it a shot? One, yeah. Oh my God, there's a trans superhero? This is already going to be on my hold.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Will I read it? I don't know. Don't much care for Flash, but I will certainly throw $5 a month at it.
Well, we'll see where he pops up, and if they are in The Flash, then that's one thing. If they are in their own book, that's even better. So, yeah, let's see what happens.
I really like their costume.
Oh, I do, too.
Yeah, I totally dig the costume. Yeah.
Is that a gun holster for his finger guns?
Yeah.
Finger gun.
I fucking hope so.
Pew, pew. You're froze.
Too many punchlines. This is fine. The meme cartoonist is celebrating the strip's 10th anniversary. Casey Green celebrates the 10th anniversary of his gun show comic On Fire, which spawned the popular This Is Fine online meme. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, Green reflected how On Fire and its optimistic burning dog have impacted his life over the last 10 years. Originally published in 2013 on the long-running gun show website, the comic's top two panels were posted on Reddit a year later and exploded in popularity across the internet and beyond. Quote, we passed it a couple days ago, but it's been 10 years since On Fire, the strip I did that became the meme, this is fine.
That blew everything up. Yeah, everybody knew what his art was, even if they didn't know who did it or where it came from or what. Yeah.
Yep. So congratulations, buddy. Mm-hmm. You made a thing, and it's still popular.
Made a thing.
Hey, I just made a thing, and now I'm done. So that's it for the news.
All right. Let's do some reviews. Let's talk about what you were reading this last week. Pat, anything?
I did not. I am lazy. No, just kidding. I was busy, and I thought about it, and I was like, I can hurry and read something before. And I'm like, nope, I have a headache. Fuck that. Sorry.
Fair. Absolutely.
Joss?
Out of my giant, like, 6-week stack that I pick up, I only read two things, and they were both Daredevil, so that I could be caught up on Daredevil. So, 6 and 7, I believe, are the mm-hmm. actual numbers of the issues I read. And we're getting, real Catholic guilty, real religious going on, a bigger swing toward Catholic religion than I've ever read in recent Daredevil, at least. I know the Born Again run was quite religious as well, but this one is shaping up to be quite a conundrum for Mr. Matt Murdock and his blushing bride Elektra. So it's been really, really good. Really good. Everybody should be reading it. What about you guys?
Jeff?
I read Black Cloak. From Kelly Thompson, and I'm really looking forward to more.
That one's the next one in my... I always organize my stack in the order I want to read them, and that's the very next one that I'm going to read.
Yep. It is cool. Sci-fi, fantasy mix. Little dystopian nice. Future thrown in for shits and giggles. I really liked it so far. I'm looking forward to more. And then Lazarus Planet Alpha... Just let me know that there was a whole crisis that just happened that I probably should have read before I read this one. Because I've got no idea what the fuck is happening. However, it was drawn well, and it was written in a comprehensible manner. So I like this as a kickoff for bad things happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that they're like, we just finished a crisis. Here's the crisis. Okay. No time to breathe. That's fine, DC. I get it. You got 20 new books coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdos.
Well, as we've said, this was kind of the plan was one guy had come up with doing Dark Crisis. Another guy had come up with doing Lazarus Planet. They're like, what will be the result of these two going on? And they're like, okay, we need to just run them. Let's just do them because the result they saw as marketable. So, yeah. Hopefully we get something good out of it. And not another new 52.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
What about you, sir?
So it was top of my stack this week. Had to be. Star Trek number 3. Because the Q visits the USS Theseus to cause trouble. And, you know, the issue's fine. It's all fine. It's all Q-ish. Of course, it's Q versus Sisko. It's the second time Sisko's met Q. He does what he always does when he meets the Q. But anyway, there's an Elkar's screen that they have after the Q shows up on one page. The next page is this Elkar's screen. And it's the query for Q continuum, and then it has the log entry results. The first is the USS Enterprise, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, 10 entries. I have never come upon him. Creature more obnoxious, more loathsome, more dangerous, or more insecure than the Q. The USS London, Captain Dolan Prem. This is completely out of canon. 7 entries. He goes on about the times the Q showed up, like the first time he turned his crew into cats. I have that t-shirt.
Nice.
But then it was the 7th and final time, he just made a lot of fart noises and pouted around my bridge complaining I wasn't paying enough attention to him. USS Voyager, Captain Catherine Janeway, 4 entries. I've seen him at his weakest, and my takeaway remains that the Q continuum are less malicious tricksters than very lonely, very powerful children.
No.
Where's my coffee? You get Deep Space Nine, Captain Benjamin Sisko, 1 entry. Q came to Deep Space Nine today. I put my fist through his face. End of log.
Nice.
And yes, this was a fun little. It's kind of a side thing, but they had to bring the Q in, you know, so it was just fun to have. I read Batman number 131. Now I know what the fuck happened. holy shit. Yeah, that's all I can say. Holy shit. All right, Batman. Let's see how you get out of this one. Meanwhile, Tim is just, you know, Dick's like, I believe you that he's still alive. He's Batman. He'll be back. And Tim's like, no, you don't get it. He's Batman 24/7. He needs me. He needs me to bring him back from the brink.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, he does. Because the last time, when Tim Drake became Robin, it's because Batman had fallen into a deep obsession. And Tim felt that he could bring Batman back from the brink. He's like the companion the Doctor needs in Doctor Who. You know, you have to have a Robin so Batman doesn't go completely overboard. The Avengers War Across Time, number one. Dear Paul Levitz, dear Alan Davis, thank you. You've made my Silver Age love and heart so happy with this issue. This goes right back to the early days of the Avengers, dealing with some Kang stuff that's going on. It was one issue. In fact, it's funny they keep calling back to one issue of, you know, the thing. This one issue, and they actually showcase it a little at the end. But this is really well written. It feels like a Silver Age comic. It's beautiful. Just so well done. Scarlet Witch number one. Dear Orlando, I can't remember your first name. I have complaints. Here's how you should have done the first issue. I know you're trying to be different. You're trying to do it different than other people. But there's a reason why it works. Like, this works, and what you did didn't work. You should have had... You should have first explained, why is Wanda so fucking OP? Because there's a lot of us who haven't been reading whatever the fuck she's been doing in the different series since her last series, where she discovered she was actually a descendant of a woman who called herself the Scarlet Witch. Okay. That it was a title, not necessarily just a good, cool superhero name that she chose. She is super over... She is really OP. Really overpowered. I mean, that first fight you see... She's flying. She basically fixes a ship with magic. She sends a guy to a weird hell realm. I'm like, wow, what's going to be a threat to her? You know? And I'm like, how did Wanda go from this to this? It kind of gets explained at the end in a way, because you have to understand why Wanda's always been this powerful, but she's always held back. Or she's never believed in herself. And at the end, you get a reason why. But it would have been cool to have kind of some moments leading up to that. Have her opening the shop. Have that door open at the end of the issue and have Darcy come out. That would have been a good first issue. Because I would have been caught up to everything. And then second issue, you give me what you gave me with this. Darcy's running the shop. She refuses to say why she's there. You've got Wanda going off and fighting the bad guys with her new OP level powers. And we take it from there. I needed that first issue. I needed something to bring me into it. Think about the readers. Stop writing your first issue like because you know the end of what your goddamn planned graphic novel is going to be. We are not here to know it. This could kill people reading Scarlet Witch. That's all I'm saying. If people read it and go, I don't know what the fuck's going on, they're not going to pick up issue two. That's all I'm saying. Meanwhile, Sarah Pichelli's art, holy shit. The way she depicts Wanda's powers is amazing. Her hair, like, turns magic when she activates her powers. It's really cool. So, yeah, really cool stuff. But, yeah, I'm complaining about the writer. And I can do that now. Shang-Chi and the Master of the Ten Rings. This is it, man. Jean Luen Yang's series is over, and pretty good ending. I want more, but you know he got 12 issues out of it. What else can he do at this point? I just don't think people were picking it up. Finally, Wonder Woman Historia number 3, which closes out Kelly Sue DeConnick's amazing arc for the history of the Amazons.
Yeah.
My God, the artwork in this. Nicholas Scott's artwork was amazing. Dear DC, I have complaints. Could you add an extra quarter of an inch to a half an inch on your interior gutters? Because when you perfect bind these books and you have this really cool two-page spread that is suddenly you can't even see what the center image really is because it's cut down in the folds, just add a couple of inches to your interior gutter so that we, you know, we can see the image when we open up the book and lay it out. That's all. Really, think about your audience again when you're doing perfect binding. Because you know who's not caring? The printers. They will take what you gave them and print because they got a deadline. This was, I mean, there is this really cool shot where Hercules is squaring off against Antiope. And I was like, this is broken up. And then there was another really cool shot of Zeus right in the middle. And his face is like collapsed because it's dead center in that seam created by the perfect binding.
That's annoying.
Yeah, I'm like, guys, come on. So, yeah, this episode is titled I Have Complaints, and that's why. I had three things to complain about this week. But aside from that, I want full-page posters of these particular pages from Nicholas Scott. This is a huge opportunity, DC Comics. Put out a... When you do the bound edition, do an oversized one, you know, like a big, long one. You have to stand up vertically on your, you know, you have to put the spine up on the top of your book when you put it on your bookshelf. Mm-hmm. Kind of like they bind the old comic strip ones. Because then I could open it up, I could get the full page without the seams. I won't get that. I'll get the typical binding and I'll still have the crease down the middle. But, you know, that would be a really good opportunity because so many of these in each of the four issues from the different artists had full page pieces that you want to study every inch of that artwork because it's so beautiful and tells you so many things in so many layers that when you get it stuck in the fold, it fucking sucks. Yeah.
Stuck in the fold.
Stuck in the fold. That's what I got. So today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow is Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week.
You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
What books are you looking forward to this week? Starting with Pat, give us an indie or a mainstream book that you want to start with.
So indie looks good. White Sir Savior. I can read. Samurai Satire. I'm going to say satire. Satire. An ancient prophecy foretold of an outsider that would save the peaceful village of I should not have picked this book clearly from an unstoppable army. A man who would confuse the people at first with his unconventional ways, but lead them to the light. Nathan Grain, captain in the United States Army, known for his vicious in battle on the American frontier, could be that man. If he weren't such an awful drunken idiot. Now it's up to Japanese American teacher Todd Parker to warn the good people of Inoki of Grain's true nature before he causes the very death and destruction they are counting on him to avert. I'm into it because, you know, alcoholism.
Well, you know, it's knocking that whole white savior thing on its ear, and it also sounds like almost a piece of history.
Right?
It sounds like a scumbag, you know, 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I like it.
How about you, Joss? What's your indie picks?
I inadvertently picked two trade paperbacks, but that's okay. From Image Comics, Above Snakes, Volume 1. It's a supernatural western about Dirt, a man out to avenge his wife's death with nothing but a bloodthirsty vulture to guide his way. What happens when the story of Dirt's pain gets stolen by others and the world he thought he understood turns upside down? So I thought that sounded really good. And then if you haven't read it yet, Public Domain by Chip Zdarsky is coming out in trade paperback. So volume one is going to collect those first five issues. I'm going to pick that one up because somehow I misplaced a couple of issues and I need to just get them all together. So I'm going to pick it up so I can read them all in one sitting. What about you, Jeff?
What you said.
That yes. Thing.
Jay-Z, what do you got?
For me this week, a couple of indies here from Sumerian Comics. How I Became a Shoplifter Number One.
Mm.
The Final Generation Before Technology Took Over.
By Winona Ryder.
Yeah. A Crime Through Boredom, a year-by-year look at the final generation of juvenile delinquents before technology took over. Watching the comical cast of characters grow up as each chapter is set in a different year of adolescence, 1996 to 2003. First issue tells nostalgic tales of toy store heists, grand theft beer runs, backstage buffoonery, counterfeit cash, and clown weed. 30 pages of art. It's Daniel Hilliard, Jordi Perez, Gabriel Falzone. All these guys are coming in as illustrators for these different stories. Tom Breckfoyle's writing it. I hope my local shop picks up Sumerian titles. I don't know if they even come in through Diamond. So this looks really fun. And then from AWA, we get Absolution. This is a trade or a graphic. I'm not sure if it came out in individual issues. Written by Peter Milligan. Art by Mike Diodato Jr. Nina Ryan was a hired killer who brought nothing but pain and suffering to the world. Now she has a month to prove that she can change, a month to make up for her crimes and find absolution, or the bombs that have been implanted in her head will explode, killing her instantly. You think? I don't know why you needed the end of that sentence there. As her journey of atonement is live streamed to a fickle public, Nina is about to discover the road to redemption might be splattered with blood. Might be. Main Street picks for me this week from Marvel, Iron Man number 2. Because it's Iron Man, and I love Iron Man. And this new thing that Jerry Duggan's doing with Ironheart and Tony and everything, I'm very interested in. And then Strange number 10, this is the end of Strange, the series. We'll take a month off, and the next month we'll have Doctor Strange coming back. And I have no idea how to pick that one up through Comic Hub, because it won't show up on the when I go through the searches. So I'll probably have to have you help me with that one, Jeff.
Strange.
Yep. Because I know it won't just pop up automatically in my hold now that everything's handled by Comic Hub. So I need to make sure it gets on there. But Strange number 10 coming out. This is the end of it. So we'll find out if Steven can come back from being the Sorcerer Supreme of Death, and if what's going to happen with Clea and the Blasphemy Cartel. All this just looks really cool. Excited for it. And finally, from DC Comics, because it's one of my favorite series right now, but also there's two things going on, two other things about it. Nightwing number 100. 100th issue of Nightwing. Big deal. I love it. But also, at the end of Dark Crisis, as I mentioned, Batman told Nightwing, we're taking a step back, the main Justice League. You're in charge of dealing with this. And this is him putting together his team. Well, of course, who's he going to call? He's going to call the Titans. And they're coming to Bloodhaven and setting up some way to, you know, be the new Justice League, the all-new Titans. So that'll be fun. How about you, Jeff? What are your mainstream picks?
I probably, you know, should have cleared it with Jocelyn first, but Wasp number 1 from Marvel, just because I like the character. I want to see what they do. I hope she can maintain the series. Mm-hmm. And then DC, I'm picking up Nightwing 100 because 100.
It's 100.
It's an investment purchase.
Very fair.
Like it.
Yeah. Who's next?
I feel less bad about not having looked at Jeff's email now, because Wasp number 1 was my mainstream pick.
No,
as well.
It all evens out because now, yeah, we're good.
Great minds think alike, man.
This is kind of a pickup from the Ant-Man one they did. You know, it's a little different. It's not the same way they did the Ant-Man one, but it's kind of a pickup from the Ant-Man one to give you at least something of Ant-Man and Wasp that'll be in a trade that Jeff can hand people when Quantumania comes out.
Quantumania comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How about you, Pat?
So my Marvel pick, and I know I technically picked this one before, because of because I like the character, but I haven't read it yet. So my pick is Namor the Submariner, Conquered Shores, number 4. So Soul of the Machine, Namor confronts the original Human Torch and has hidden machine enclave in the Arctic Circle. They have history. What are these machines' true intentions? The death of service-dwelling humans? The overthrow of Atlantis itself? Old grudges will reignite as the Torch and Submariner take on their battles to skies and seas once more. So that's going to be exciting. Because, you know, Namor is dick, and I'm kind of into it.
Yeah.
For DC, actually, I have a DC one, because it's Batman, One Bad Day, Bane number 1. So, I don't know what's going on, but I like this idea. The past, the present, and the future destroyed by Venom. Bane broke the bat. He's one of the only villains to ever truly vanquish the Dark Knight, but is still... But is that all he's ever accomplished? Decades from now, Bane is a washed-up wrestler receiving his glory days in the ring, reliving his glory days in the ring, defeating someone dressed like Batman every day. But when he discovers that a new source of venom in the world, he'll do everything he can to shut down the facility. It's coming from the good and makes sure that no one takes the poison that ruined his life. So... It looks fucking sweet, because Bane is an interesting character when he's not
badly
steroiding.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's depth there.
Just the thug in the background?
Yeah, there's depth there, and I like it.
And not just, you know, has that weird mask.
Hello, Batman.
Yeah. No, it's this one. I like the where they said, you know, was that his only accomplishment? I'm like, yes, it was. Awesome. Well, I guess that's it. Anything else, kids?
Nope. Not for me.
Well, we missed our funding goal.
You think?
Not by a little bit. The good news is that it's, you know.
I'm leaving it up. It's there if anybody wants to pop over and click on it.
You can still go in and do it. It's because it's not like Kickstarter where it's all or nothing and we'll shut down. But you know what is all or nothing is Kickstarter. And you know what's launching on Kickstarter is Shaolin Nun. So let's get in and back that one. Remember, it's a 45-day Kickstarter. You will not be charged for 45 days. So
plan around it.
And don't worry about not having money right now, because I've had a lot of people, you know, I'm not making fun of you, Jocelyn. I understand where you were coming from. I literally, in the last 3 Kickstarters, have had people say, well, I just don't have any money right now. And I'm like, it closes in 30 days. Oh, well, I guess I could back it. And it's like, okay, I'm helping you out. But yeah, for some, they never even got back to me and they never backed. So it was just that, oh, just tell me you don't want to back. It's okay if you don't want to back it. You'll only break my heart a little bit. It's okay. Yeah, so we're doing that. And meanwhile... Another great way to support this network is to join our Patreon squad. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Join our squad. Get additional content. Did you know it has been 30 years since since Vertigo launched for DC Comics? And we are going to talk about it. We're going to talk about that. In fact, there's so much to talk about with Vertigo having its 30th anniversary. This will be part one of us talking about it. So join us on Patreon this week. Learn about some Vertigo stuff. Maybe you don't know anything about Vertigo. I bet you've seen half of the IP that's come out of Vertigo in a series or a movie. So check it out, and we'll be talking about it. Until then, I will say, as I always do, until Darcy's running a magic shop, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
Balls.
For Asgard.